We have a fantastic speaker this morning. Dr. Julianne Nastowski is the president and the senior economist for Research Dimension. She's also an adjunct visiting professor in the Department of Economics at Chulalongkorn University in Bangkok. She has an impressive background, more than 24 years of experience as an economist, a policy analyst, a legal analyst, a certified planner, a resource manager, and a social scientist. She got her PhD from Edinburgh University in economics, got a master's degree from Duke in resource economics and rural policy, a master's degree from the University of Edinburgh in urban design and regional planning, a law degree from the University of Edinburgh with Duke in planning law, and a bachelor's degree from the University of Minnesota in legal studies and environmental policy. And I think her work addressed probably the most important issues in this area of water and the environment is how do you put an economic value on ecosystem resources? You know, we all know it's valuable. In fact, the value is infinite. But how can we quantify it so that it has some ground in decision making? Because so oftentimes when cost analysis comes down, I have to put a dollar value on things. And so this is why this work is so important that Dr. Gostanski is doing. Let's offer a warm welcome to Dr. Gostanski.
Can everyone hear me? Is this working? Doesn't sound too good, huh?
Hi.
How's that? Is it better? Yeah?
Okay.
Of course.
Well, I'd like to thank Debbie and the folks here at the University of Washington for waking me up at the crack of dawn and having me drive north to Seattle to talk to you all today. As Anne said, I'm going to be talking about putting a price tag on water rights. And the whole of this conversation is really on a model, an ecosystem services valuation model that myself, working with some folks from the Washington Water Trust and in coordination with a project that they were engaged in that included the tribes and Army Corps of Engineers and several other people and a bunch of stakeholders, started work on back in 2002. So anyway, this is where I hope we're going to go, what we're going to cover. I'm going to briefly share with you the team of folks, the great people who helped me think clearly and put into action some of my conceptions and do all else that I can't do, like GIS implementation, and basically keep me grounded. Most of these folks are colleagues of mine from every place except Washington. Chuck Harris is a professor of natural resources at the University of Idaho. Nantana Gajazeni is a professor of ecology at Chulalongkorn University. She has a long history of trying to. She works specifically with water and water resource issues. And her PhD centered on attempting to evaluate the economic values associated with water resources in the Mekong River area. Steve Colt, assistant professor at the University of Alaska. Chad Pirskala, he's originally from Minnesota, as am I, where we have lots of water. Our water issues are different. Our water laws are different. Roger Kupal is a professor and head of department. He's an applied economist at the University of Wyoming and did his PhD work here at Washington. Dorothy Anderson is a social resource scientist. She's head of the School of Natural Resources, and I can't remember the exact department, but she's at the University of Minnesota, and her area of specialty is content analysis and basically taking qualitative information, what people think and feel about various things and putting them into ranking scales and using those types of instruments to inform economic a lot of the economic valuation that we do. Ariel Bergman is actually one of my former PhD students. He currently oversees work at our field office in Colorado and is a permanent staff person at Resource Dimensions UK, which is, we have two offices in the UK, one in Edinburgh and one in Stirling. Grace Wong is an assistant professor at Western Washington University, and she and Dorothy and Chad and Chuck all go back years and years. All of them work in the field of basically taking qualitative information and helping to define resource policy and management. And then the rest of the folks are various staff people. So that's my team. So I didn't do this all entirely on my own. But it was, the quest actually began over lunch at a Mediterranean cafe here in Seattle in the spring of 2002, when I first sat down to meet the then executive director of the Washington Water Trust, Yolanka Wolf, and Peter, both of whom have moved on to other endeavors. But nonetheless, what they wanted, and it was as a result of the project that they had going over in the Walla Walla Basin, they wanted to be more competitive in the marketplace so that when they were working with landowners to acquire water rights, that they had a valuation that made them competitive against any other person out there on the open market seeking water rights. So water right acquisitions to restore in-stream flows, either through leases, purchases, dry year options, or other transactions, have required a creation of a new and previously untested marketplace. We're now, almost 4 years since the first time we sat down to talk about this, and there's been a lot of progress made. but essentially, this was what we were set up to do, to develop a valuation approach that addressed existing limitations of current valuation methods, which have been typically grounded in standard appraisal methods, which is really quite unusual in the Western United States, as you probably all know. Water isn't actually treated as part of the land, so to use a valuation methodology to determine some approximate value of water rights based on a method used to determine land values was quite interesting. So ultimately, that's the model that we're going to be talking about. And the resource, of course, is water, or more specifically, water rights. Water, for any of you who have had anyone had environmental economics or natural resource economics? Yeah? So you all know, basically, that water is defined as a public transient good, unlike land, which is stationary. Water moves. And value and values and valuation, what do we mean? What are the determinants? Values and valuation are three distinct, while they have the same base word, their value in and of itself is more tied to how we as individuals or as a group of individuals act out our preferences in the choices we make, whether it's in policy or in making a decision to study versus go to the movie or whatever. Values and valuation are based, values are basically, in economic terms, values are essentially defining monetary values through a process that we call valuation. Valuing water rights was actually quite an interesting challenge for me. I come from a background most specifically centered in developing decision support tools to value and integrate ecosystem service values and ecological values for land conservation purposes as opposed to water and water rights. Basically, I had to start at the very beginning when I started thinking about how do we attempt putting together a model that will accomplish the goals of the client. So valuing water rights really required knowledge of and the understanding of a whole variety of characteristics and costs that are associated with each individual water right. And just like each parcel of land, each individual water right has its own unique set of legal characteristics, current use, priority date, etc., and its own unique set of resource characteristics, annual quantities, flow rates, quality and treatment costs that might be associated, location, transfer costs, etc. So in thinking about how we marry basically what are more traditional standard values set in both law and the resource characteristics, we needed to bring together our ideas about how we establish values for the non-market resources, the goods and services generated by water and water resources. And so these are the other sources of value. Non-market can be either a use value, as in fishing or boating, or an inherent intrinsic value, as in scenic views, vistas, these sorts of things. The next couple of slides, we tore apart and laid out a taxonomy as we started thinking about how we go through and identify the various values and what value, so that ultimately in the end we didn't have a bunch of overlapping values and create some incorrect measure. So we tore it down. This is the use value taxonomy. So essentially, these are all water-related uses, whether it's in-stream, withdrawal, or near-stream, that result in actual use of the resource. And this portion of the taxonomy is inherent value. We have future use, which is we're setting this aside. There may be some potential use into the future, but the option and bequest values are associated with future uses. And then we have non-use, amenity, and existence values that are such as stewardship, pure existence, habitat values, things that are other than necessarily for human consumption, although we do have vicarious consumption. So a water right I'm assuming that most people understand that a water right is effectively the authorization, the legal authorization, to use in the state of Washington. The law has a very very differently defined way than most of the water law that I was accustomed to prior to coming here. So it's the legal authorization to use a predefined amount of water for a designated beneficial use. And water rights and water right law in Washington and most, if not all, of the western states is based on the prior appropriation principle, which treats water as a resource unrelated to land, as I said earlier. So you have first in time, first in right. The common operation is basically you use your right to the water or you lose it. And as a result of this construction of water right laws, water in the West is an extraordinary economic issue. When I'm talking about the economic valuation of ecosystem services, ultimately we always must remember that economic value is value to humans, and that's the underlying fundamental premise of the model and how we basically interpret value throughout this model and most other work that we do. And ecosystem services have value to humans because they are scarce and they provide utility. All economic valuation methods start with utility. An ecosystem service is a good or service that flows from an ecosystem that is of value to humans and occurs naturally. And basically, this is the simple formula function. And an example, and in this model, the example is in-stream flow. So as within the model of in-stream flow, we have these are just a sampling of the 27 different criteria that were developed, used, and a variety of matrices and weighting tools used to evaluate and measure and bring values from such things as precipitation, terrain, soils, aquifers, biota, etc., into the model, into the valuation process. How ecosystem services provide utility? Again, a simple, straightforward economic model, and by the time we manipulated this, we had 27 variables, and it went through a lot of tweaks. But this is the underlying utility function model that explains how ecosystem services provide utility to humans. Essentially, we have ecosystem goods and services that require no other inputs, the air we breathe, for example. And we have ecosystem goods and services that require other inputs, labor and capital, prior to consumption. That's pretty straightforward, I think.
What's an example of that?
An example of ecosystem goods and services that require other inputs, for example, water treatment, water that needs to be treated prior to coming out your faucet.
Thanks.
This is, as I said earlier, historically, water rights have used a real estate appraisal valuation approach. Real estate approaches are market-based, Typically, it's the highest and best use transfer of water rights that's used. Sales comparison, income capitalization, land value differentials, and development or lease cost alternatives are different appraisal methods. When we get a little further into the model, I'll explain that we actually went with a modification of the income capitalization approach in coupling standard appraisal methods with the non-market economic valuation approach that we use. These are a variety of non-market economic valuation methods. They're market-based, based on producer, consumer, and consumer surplus. For what it's worth, we, in this model, did not employ every single one of these approaches. The different approaches are best used for in specific circumstances. Hedonic methods, you're measuring the, for example, if you live near a park or whatever, it's a methodology that measures land values at distances from a good or service. We use contingent valuation preference methodology, and we also use choice experiments, which is it's another preference valuation tool. So the initial reason behind the move in the direction of developing this model stems very much in the traditional from the traditional appraisal limitations. There's an inadequate capture of full economic value. None of the methods account for influences over ecosystem service features such as biodiversity. They don't take into account services provided by aquatic systems or any other terrestrial systems. They're entirely market-driven, market-based. And they don't account for additional social costs of water use, as in depleting our groundwater resources. Here I've just laid out sort of the four standard categories of economic valuation methods. You have market, which is okay if you're used to, the market is basically, we go to the grocery store and we know a can of beans is going to be a certain amount. Market is prices and charges. But the methodology that we needed to use to bring in the values that we're concerned about is the non-market valuation method. It means essentially that the goods and services being provided by the resource are not bought or sold directly, therefore have no directly observable value. Here I just threw up some examples of ecosystem goods and services and substitutes just to give you an idea of what we are talking about. And I specifically chose renewable raw materials, but we have an ecosystem stock. If it is in a watershed, the goods and services provided could be groundwater storage and clean water that occurs via natural processes. The substitute is a man-made water reservoir where clean water comes to us via treatment. When we started to, once we moved from our taxonomies and started thinking about the benefits, the goods and services, and the benefits derived from those goods and services, we identified basically this category of seven principal beneficiaries and the derivative benefits of those, because we couldn't, basically, the system is so complex, for one, that identifying a value for each and every ecosystem service provided by a unique parcel within an entire basin, we'd still be thinking about it today. So we had to start narrowing down the list and work to identify basically those benefits that the client and the Army Corps of Engineers and the tribes and stakeholders thought were most relevant. And then we had, and so after we did sort of the most relevant test, after having several meetings and focus groups and trying to get a good handle on what the social temperature was, we narrowed it down to this list, which was then further narrowed down by basically, this wasn't a project where we had the time to gather all primary data. We had to rely on using data from similar studies, using findings from similar studies, and use a benefit transfer methodology to basically determine values and how they would fit into the model. So anyway, this is essentially the benefits construction provided by in-stream waters that that we started working with. And we never really came up with a good acronym for this model. The clients were calling it the eWERV model, but basically, it's an integrated ecological economics-based valuation framework. And as I said, we included social dimensions. Social dimensions were done through a wide variety of public inquiries, focus groups, conversations, and ultimately that's what helped us to develop the framework that we were going to look at evaluating. The economics and the ecological, again, all of those, and the ecological was also, there were people with science backgrounds as well as just average people who were brought together to talk about what within the ecosystem was meaningful, how it was meaningful, and how we could incorporate their values, social values, into this model. So ultimately, the question that came up on numerous occasions as we were working through this, not from us, not from our client, but from people who wanted to understand, well, you know, why isn't the traditional method, why isn't that good enough? Or so ultimately, the question was, why is an integrated approach even necessary? Why are we spending our time here with you this evening when we could be doing something else? And ultimately, it's to incorporate spatial and temporal choral elements, which I'll show you in a few minutes, we did by linking the model to a GIS framework. And to more accurately identify the total economic value of specific water rights. And although the system in its, as it was left after its first round of beta testing was still fairly rough, we still were able to identify on a parcel specific basis a range of water right value for either lease or full purchase. And this is the conceptual overview of this integrated approach. So in the core part of the analysis, we looked at the range of competing demands for water and water resources. We looked at how water and water resources and water rights and the whole ball of everything connect, all things connected, improved quality of life. We looked at social and local and regional economic information, metro-rural linkages, autonomous trends, and the dynamic changing economy. So this basically set up our the first part of our framework so that we could start thinking about how, for example, do we treat equity analysis and how do we integrate information that we may not have the answers to, but that we can at least provide some thought based on the social matrices that we developed and to integrate intergenerational accountability weightings, and we address property rights, privileges, responsibilities. The impact analysis component is played out in several different ways throughout the analyses. But essentially, if anyone's had cost-benefit analysis, anybody? No? Well, basically, we conducted it in much the way you would do a cost-benefit analysis, where you look at the ratio between cost and benefit, and then we created an impact matrix to address subsidies, externalities, environmental, economic resiliency, etc. And as we, I mean, it was probably more at the end of the project than as we were going through, where we were asked to consider the pros and cons of what we had just spent quite a great deal of time doing. But ultimately, this is where we fell out. We felt that the tool, although it still needed refining, it incorporated dimensions of economic value that were not previously incorporated into any tool or instrument that helped inform water right acquisitions. So it accounted for environmental and ecosystem service values, captured captured values as option and existence values. It increased the likelihood of acquisitions for conservation, which was ultimately the goal, at least of the client. And addressed intergenerational equity issues, accounted for social costs of resource depletion. The cons, of course, imperfect understanding of the range of issues and impact, which is down at the bottom, probably should be at the top, because we're always learning new information, and there's a certain component of information in any decision support tool where you're trying to identify intergenerational issues. We really don't know if our values will be the same as the values 20, 30, 50 years from now. So there's shifting values and preferences. Attaining acceptance is a big one. Several of the models that I've worked on, including this one, because they're an extension of something that's sort of ingrained and is accustomed to being used, and in the case of land and conservation easement valuation, which I get involved with quite a lot, there's already a whole set of laws that say, well, if you're going to take a conservation a taxable deduction for your conservation easement, this is the method, and it has to be done by a certified appraiser, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a certain amount of resistance to change. So those are the commons. But we went ahead anyway. Constructing the model, this is basically a list of the requirements of the data inputs. We had data for local and regional property values, local and regional economic trends data, growth patterns, and expected future growth. Information on competing demands, that was derived from the social valuation exercises. Information about development pressures. We ranked and weighted key biophysical data. I didn't, because I'm not an ecologist, but those who are did. And we used a lot of primary studies data. So this is the first piece of the model. This is phase one, and this is an extended appraisal value module because of that fact that appraisal methods are still the accepted standard. We decided that we needed to integrate the two valuation processes rather than try and do something whole, entirely new, because it was what was going to be accepted ultimately. And so we used a standard income capitalization process, but we extended it a bit, and by that we did some things that are not typically done within a standard income capitalization appraisal, in that we estimated land value with water rights, and then there were some additional steps to the process in order to do that. In the end, we were able to extract the land value from the water value, and that was kind of the key element that we were trying to get to in this component of the model. So in the end, we ended up with an appraised value of the water rights. The second phase is the ecological economics module. And here, the underlying objective is to obtain an ecological economics water rights value. And how we did that, we used some of those methods that I referred to earlier, choice experiments, conjoint analysis, and contingent valuation, to identify values for habitat provision, biodiversity, conservation, non-consumptive uses, and future use. And we brought, once that was done, we determined opportunity costs and this was like a sidekick thing. We were interested in identifying the scientific, educational, research opportunities, and the client agreed that it was a worthy thing to include in the model, and so we included that within our valuation of the non-market goods and services provided. And we then took everything, we took what we learned from the first two components of the model and used benefit transfer methodologies to basically take information and findings from other studies and relocate them to what we knew and had learned about values and social, economic, and policy values for the Walla Walla. And ultimately, we ended up with the ecological, economics, water rights values. So then we have these two values. We have the appraisal value, and we have the ecosystem. Ecological economics water rights value was actually the language of the client. We tend to use ecosystem service values interchangeably. And that was linked to a relational database using GIS, in which we had spatial data, current land use data, primary economic information, land markets, tax assessment data, the legal attributes for each parcel within the basin, and so information about priority dates and seniority, the water right capabilities and capacity, all in there. And then policy information, tax and policy incentives, zoning regulations. It's all in this multi-layered relational database. So, effectively, when we put that all together, what we ended up with was an inventory that characterized and identified goods and services, and left us with a valuation process in which we had in which we could apply the values to the whole of the region or on a site-specific parcel at the parcel level. Using GIS, we then the overlays allowed us to depict and interpret the results. This is the basin. So, basically, what was I think at that time quite unique, and there's been people who have extrapolated and expanded this since, was that we were able to map the regional water right characteristics, land cover typology, and the economic data by combining these various layers of coarse land use and ecological data with finer scale species and ESA status for certain species, the hydraulic data, priority dates, and the legal attributes and characteristics at the parcel level. And the results basically are a parcel-specific water rights valuation. So through the breakdown of the ecological service values, and again, although it was admittedly coarse, this was not a really well-funded project, but it was one that everybody decided to pitch in on because it was kind of groundbreaking, basically. So what we ended up with was the ability to estimate water rights basins at the parcel level using the integrated GIS interface and ultimate, this screenshot here was one way that we configured the model to assist with identifying parcels for priority water right acquisition. But the model can also be set up in different ways. Output can be sent to a variety of Excel-based tables, etc. But this was ultimately where Washington Water Trust wanted to get, was to be able to identify, A, where they should be targeting their time and energy, and what values are associated. So the challenges and opportunities, which we knew from the beginning, is that there's considerable variability in the quality and availability of much of the data that we used to develop this model. The complexity of the system is tricky, as is any of the ecosystem service valuation efforts that we undergo. I mean, ecosystem services and goods are interrelated and they're bundled. They're not easily teased apart. But in some respects, at least the first part of the model, which pulled the land and the water right values apart, was a little bit easier. But once we started looking at all these interrelated values, it got a little trickier. So to the extent that we could, we tried to ensure that there was, you know, that we removed as much double counting or possibilities for that. The opportunities, I think, ultimately it was clear that non-market valuation data can really be a meaningful baseline for integration with traditional methods to establish a more certain marketplace for water rights. It provided at least a better starting point for the Water Trust in moving forward to think about how it negotiated individual water right transactions. I think there's a ton of opportunities that remain for work in this area, but one of the primary ones is a need to establish contextual similarity between what we did on this pilot project and in that pilot marketplace and the range of baseline source data that we used if this were to become a more universal tool that could be basically picked up and used in any watershed or basin. So ultimately, I guess I'm at the end. In case you're curious about, I didn't throw the range, the value ranges in any of the discussion because it was quite variable. But we did end up with an average for the basin for both permanent water rights acquisition. It was around $470 per acre foot in 2003 dollars, and around $57 per acre foot for leases. So, you know, that definitely set a place for people to start from. But anyway, because the valuation went from basically something around $8 to over $1,000 per acre foot, I decided it was, for our purposes here today, it really didn't serve the purpose of talking about the model. The conclusions, basically, the use and distribution of water in the West is an economic issue. Traditional appraisal methods implicitly undervalue decisions regarding the use, distribution, and stewardship of water rights, and they don't accurately interpret and reflect the value of society within the traditional appraisal method. And water rights, while they're heavily allocated to agricultural production, they have many other attributes, and those attributes are elemental to forming a wide variety of joint products. And ultimately, we believe that there's a lot of work to be done to refine this model or others in order to standardize its parameters for use in other watershed basins. And that's it. So thank you.